Sports Speak Podcast. This is your host, Aaron Daniels. My pursuit of basketball minds on this particular episode. I got what's grown to be a good friend of mine, the head boys basketball coach at Northwest Classen High School. They're fresh off of a state semifinal run this year. And this is just one out of several good teams that this man has had. I'm talking about Jason Jack. Where you at, coach? You doing all right?
Yeah, man, I'm good. I'm just sitting here in my office at my house.
There you go. Look at you. Always, you know, mine is running 100 miles an hour.
I'm ready for this Game of Thrones, episode coming up. You know, like the rest of America is.
Absolutely, absolutely. It's all we always got to have our minds on something other than just the hoops. We got to have our decompression period.
Absolutely,
right?
Man. Absolutely.
Well, good. We're gonna jump right into it, so I can give you time enough to do that. Man, listen, I want to talk about the most recent turn of events. Talk about this year's team and this year's run. You guys were able to get to the semifinal round of the state tournament in a very winnable game. You know, no disrespect to Dale City, but I definitely was rooting for y'all on the low. And, sure. it was there for the taking, but you came up a little short. But just talk about this year's team and everything that led up to the finish.
Yeah, we kind of came into this thing as a younger group this year. You had two guys with Daylon Wiggins and Davion Warden, who were obviously returning off of a 26-2 season and a state semifinal appearance the previous year. You graduated pretty heavy the year before. We kind of knew we had our hands full. We kind of thought, okay, these younger guys are really talented. But we weren't obviously sure how they would react in the moment. I think they were a little unproven, and we definitely, as the season first started towards the end, I think there was just drastic improvement, a better understanding of what they could do on the court. I think, we got big game tested. Our scheduling was really important for us throughout the year. We were tested. I think the previous year we felt like, at times our schedule wasn't testing us the way we wanted it to be tested. I think we talked as a staff several times after the season was over with, and we all were in agreement that we felt like we needed to lose a couple more games. We obviously went into that state tournament last year with only one loss, and that was a loss to a really good team out of Texas. And so we felt like we definitely wanted to be tested in some other ways. We were winning games, but we weren't winning them necessarily the right way. And that's kind of how what we preached to our guys this year. We were going to be tested. Our schedule was going to test us. We wanted to make sure that, we presented our guys some adversity so that we could grow from those mistakes and those lessons. So, that was kind of our mindset as a coaching staff going into things. And so you definitely saw our guys grow as the season progressed to become a really good basketball team. And I really enjoyed watching those guys grow and learn on and off the court. And it was a really fun year. I'll be honest with you. I still am, part of me is still a little upset and disappointed because we felt like we should have been in a state championship this year and, had a 9-point lead at one point, I think in the fourth quarter. And kind of, you have to give your hats off to Dell City. They really, turned up the pressure on us and missed some free throws, had some mistakes. And I've only been able to actually watch the first quarter of it. That's about all I've been able to stomach so far. I have actually not watched the entire game film of that Dell City game just because I'm slowly still trying to heal from it,
Yeah, no, don't want to rip that. Don't want to rip the whole bandage off in one swing, huh?
Sure. But, it's been fun. You had a bunch of guys that just were really good kids, wanted to learn. Wanted to get better, asked questions, were really engaged in film sessions. And so I think when you have a bunch of guys that are selfless, that want to win and put winning first and not their egos. And I think when you have those kind of complexions of guys, man, you can really win a lot of basketball games and have a lot of success. And I think that we had that going for us versus last year. I think we had a lot of talent, but not necessarily everybody was on the same page. And so I think everybody kind of moving into to this year was bought in on what we were selling them as a coaching staff. And, you know, obviously the rest is history, and had a really good run and great season. And you're going to return a lot of guys next year that are bought in, and now they're weathered and have experience under their belt, which will pay dividends for us in the long run.
And that's a big time statement right there, Coach. And because here's the thing, I don't necessarily believe that egos are always a bad thing. They just have to be managed, right?
Sure.
And looking at some of you guys' personnel, because I had the privilege to come to a couple of you guys' practices. You all had a lot of talent and had a lot of naturally gifted and athletic players, but roles seemed to be established, at least by the time that I came around. Now, was that difficult to get guys not only to understand what their role is, but to accept it? Or did it take a little, was it in an instant, or did it take a little while for you to have to fight with them to get them to lock in?
Well, I think, you know, there's not fights that occur. I mean, there's definitely meetings. We'll have one-on-one film sessions. We'll have, you know, we'll bring two or three guys down to our office, you know, periodically throughout the year, and, you know, present them information and analytical stuff, you know, that we understand as coaches, and say, look, here's these numbers, or here's this particular play on this particular possession that we're, you know, kind of referring to. This is why we're saying this, and this is why we need you to do this or that or whatever it may be. And so, you know, I think when you come at it, first of all, with a you know, the facts, and when you come at it with, I guess, love, I mean, they know that we love them. They know that we definitely have their best interests in our minds. So I think that when you come at it with those angles, they do buy in to what we're selling them. And I think that, you know, it eliminates a lot of potential problems down the road. If you're, you know, just having those face-to-face conversations and you're just truly honest with your players.
Major move, man. Leadership. That's what I want to talk about next. And I think this is an interesting one, because I kick this around with as many folks that'll listen to me. I always wonder what coaches' philosophies are when it comes to who the leaders are. Are you the type that believes that your best player has to be your most vocal leader, or can it be somebody who may not be number one, two, three, four, or even five on the depth chart?
No, I don't think that it has to be your best player. Now, I think as a coach, you would want it to be your best player.
I agree.
You want your best player to you know, have the best character and be the most vocal or lead by example type dude. But it doesn't always have to be your best player. And I don't think I've had teams when, you know, it could be a guy coming off the bench that was, you know, kind of our leader that everybody kind of, you know, respected as a player, coaches respected as a player. So I think it just varies year to year and from player to player. I think, you know, you have to identify that as a coach moving into the next year, or you have to kind of sell that to your team or talk to that particular player. Like, listen, like, you know, you're the guy. Like, they follow you, they believe in you, they when you are speaking, they're listening, or they're following your lead. And so, you know, those are conversations that we've had with players throughout my time as a head coach and with our staff. So no, I don't think it has to be your best player, but like I said, I think every coach would probably agree they would like for it to be their best player, but doesn't always happen that way.
That's right. And in your program, what's your rubric, so to speak, in terms of the things that would earn a player the credibility to be able to open up their mouths and push people and challenge them, and then also have those players respect and accept that challenge?
Well, that's a good question. You know, I think it really kind of stems from their off the court choices. I think, you know, that's something that we harp on with our guys. You know, what are we doing? You know, it's fine what you're doing between the lines, but is that carrying over to your day to day? Like, how are you carrying yourself down the hallway? How are you acting and carrying yourself in your home with your family? And I think that as coaches, we can identify the kids that are real and the kids that are, you know, preaching what they're saying in between the lines versus giving out that fake stuff. And we can figure out, you know, real quick. I don't know if there's necessarily a rubric, but I think more or less it boils down to your choices and actions off the court. Kind of gets me some respect to you. Okay, yeah, you can hoop, but who are you as a person? That's what I want to know. So I think that's something that I'm always looking for. And I know our coaches, Coach Womack, Mo, and some of those guys, Coach Creed, they definitely were bought into stuff like that as well. And we can identify if a kid is truly that leadership material that we're looking for.
Yeah, for sure. And to add to that, I think the players, as kids in general, whether we're talking students or student athletes, I think they got a pretty good BS detector, if you know what I mean. You know,
sure. Players know players. Yeah,
for real. Sure. And so whenever you're in that gym and the guy that's busting his tail, he usually has earned a little bit of credibility to where the guys are like, okay, I'll listen to you gripe at me because you're pulling your weight, as opposed to the studio gangster, as I call him. You know, yeah. Sounds good on paper and on wax, but when it's time to put the rubber on the road, gets a little dicey.
Absolutely. Players know players. We've said that before. You know, I mean, I remember as a player, I remember respecting certain dudes and then not respecting certain dudes. So players know players, coaches know coaches, people know people. I mean, it's just, you know, what are you doing to earn that respect and how are you going about it just daily basis? Right. So
now, sort of related to that, and this is something if you'd like to touch on it, great. If you don't, I totally understand. But let me preface it by saying, you know, as a player in during my days, and we're not that much different in terms of age, but I've been on some teams where we were ultra talented, right? But we still underachieved, and it was due in large part to some of the reasons that you said last year's team didn't go as far as maybe you wanted them to. But I can remember a season after that one as a player, we had less in terms of talent, but it turned out to be a lot more. And what I'm gearing up to say is I know that you all ended up either losing or dismissing one of your big time pieces from your program relatively early before the season even started. Sure. What type of effect did that have on the ball club one way or the other?
Well, I think it galvanized our guys. I think they're like, okay, these coaches are serious about character and choices and decisions. And okay, somebody's going to have to step up. Because they did respect him as a player. Mm-hmm. They knew he was talented. You know, they definitely knew that somebody was going to have to fill the void. And I think we kind of did that not by just one individual player. I think it was just everybody kind of coming together and playing the game the right way, so to speak. And I think that's what we definitely kind of preached to them, you know, after that occurred. And so we definitely, I think, kind of did things as a unit, the way the game should be played. So I kind of always kind of reference the San Antonio Spurs throughout the year. You know, they just seem to move the ball, share the ball, enjoy being around each other. You know, Popovich has always kind of had teams that way and bought into those styles of play. So that was kind of my line of thinking through the whole process. And like I said, I think it did wonders for us. I think everything happens for a reason. And, you know, obviously the rest is history as far as how things kind of transpired for us. But, you know, I think it was perfect for us.
For sure. Now, I know as coaches, whether this is something that is frowned upon or if it's something that's accepted, I don't know. But I know sometimes we tend to play the what if game, and we, you know, we make creating scenarios and trying to come up with some types of answers, which we'll never get. Did you ever kick around the ideas, you know, ever since y'all season ended all the way to now, where you ever sit around like, dang, what if it worked out with that kid combined with what we ended up with? Maybe. Would that have been enough for us to get over that hump? Did you ever kick that around?
You know, I can't really say that I did. I think once it happened, I just decided, okay, this is what we're going to do. This is how we're going to do it. And, you know, let the chips fall where they may. And I don't think I ever really looked back, but I get what you're saying. Mm-hmm. And I'm sure I've done that in the past in certain situations. But in this particular situation, no, I don't think that I what if'd it. I don't think I second guessed it. I don't think that there was any of that that occurred in this particular situation. So, you know, I guess that's a good thing. But like I said, I think that everything happens for a reason. And, you know, I'm not sure you know, we didn't go through those steps and those processes and present our guys with that adversity, I'm not sure we have as successful of a season as we did this year.
Great point. Great point. And I think one thing has everything to do with the other in a lot of those cases as well.
Sure.
Now, here's another thing I wanted to ask you, man. And I actually thought I was absent-minded the last time I saw you. I wanted to run this at you. But I can remember as a player and even in my short career up to this point as a coach, I can remember some signature moments where I was like, okay. And I saw a difference in our team. Is there a particular point in your season, this past season, that you would, you know, in hindsight, call the turning point where you saw your team in a different light and you're like, okay, we're starting to get it. We're starting to look like we can hit that next gear and take stride and see how far we could go.
Yeah. Well, I think before, you know, you had that high point. Right before we had that high point, we had probably the lowest point in our season, and that was right after the Jinx Union Invitational. Uh-huh. We lost a really close game to Tulsa Union, had them down by double figures the majority of the game, ran out of gas at the end. I think we were missing a player during that time I can't necessarily remember, but I'm pretty sure we were missing somebody. We ran out of gas. I felt like we played a pretty good game, good enough to win. Mm-hmm. And then we came out the next night and we were really flat against a Hall and Hall team that made class 4A state tournament, and we felt like, okay, you know, we just dropped a game that we should not have dropped. And you were in that seventh, eighth place game, you know, at 11 a.m. on the next Saturday. You're just like, I remember telling my staff, like, I can't remember the last time we were in a seventh, eighth place game. I couldn't remember. And so, you know, none of our guys were happy with that. You know, we were presented some adversity. I think Holland Hall kind of exposed us. They played us a 2-3 zone the entire time. And our guys just truly didn't know how to attack a zone. So, you know, that was the second or third time somebody had presented us with a zone of some sort. And we were just like, okay, we've got to start working on some zone stuff. Our guys have got to understand how to attack this, because word's going to get out. Coaches are going to talk to each other. Film's going to be sent. You know, everybody in America is going to zone up. See these particular losses. So especially moving into the state tournament, we knew that. You know, that occurred. And then I think, you know, we had kind of a break where there was about a week or so off where we just truly worked on nothing but zone stuff. Okay, our man-to-man stuff is beautiful. We moved the ball, we were moving off the ball, and so that we felt like was really, really solid. We felt like if anybody man-to-man us, they were going to lose. that's how we felt. That's how confident we were in our man-to-man offensive sets, right, and motion principles. So you know, we definitely made sure that our guys understood that, and then we started really working the zone stuff, and that might have been a mistake that I made, not spending enough time enough on the zone stuff. But moving forward, you know, I think a couple teams tried to play us some zone stuff. Douglas for sure, you know, John Marshall, that was actually a game that we felt like okay, this is a huge game for a conference championship. It was at our place, and we handled them pretty well that particular game and said, okay, all right, that was a big game. And we kind of put the foot on the pedal that particular game. Like, okay, all right, I'm seeing something here. And then, you know, like I said, Douglas, we were pretty positive. They got their hands on some film from one of those teams that zoned us, and they zoned us the entire time. And we had to grind that out and came away with a win against a really good Douglas team. They're tough, just hard-nosed dudes over there at Douglas. And then, you know, now you're done with your season. You're moving into playoffs. And I think the game that really kind of set us forth was that Claremore game for the regional championship. Mm-hmm. After that, I was like, because they 3-2'd us pretty much the entire time. And that was a really good basketball team, Claremore was. It kind of surprised me that they didn't make the state tournament, because that was a really, really good basketball team. They just did some stuff that just made it real difficult for you to beat them. Of course, they won their conference, and they were ranked really high, but we were able to beat those guys in a big-time game and big-time moments, guys stepping up and making big-time plays. And I think, you know, at that point, I was like, okay, yeah, we've been preaching this stuff to these guys. We can go win a state championship. We can go state tournament. I think at that point, we was like, yeah, okay, we're legit. You know, we can get this thing done. Now let's go get this thing done.
That's what I'm talking about, man. And I actually got to see a couple of those games. I watched the matchup against Douglas at y'all's place, and, man, that was nitty-gritty. It came down to the last few possessions, and you guys were able to outlast them. I remember watching guys in the area. I mean, that game was sort of a meat and potatoes, grind it out. You know, it took a while for you guys to pull away. But I happen to believe that when you've got a team that can figure out a way to win any style of game, now we're talking about somebody.
Yeah, yeah. We feel like our guys just truly believe that they're going to win every time they step foot on the floor. And when you add that element to their skill set, you know, it makes a really good basketball program. So I think they truly believe, and we truly believe as a coaching staff, every time we're taking the floor, we ain't taking the floor to lose. We're taking the floor to beat you, no matter who it is. I know Coach Mo always said if a third grade girls team rolls out and shows up, or if the Thunder rolls out and shows up, we're going to beat you.
That's got to be the appropriate.
You know, it doesn't matter who's showing up. We're here and we're ready to work. So, and our guys take that mindset to the floor, and I think at all levels, you know, with our freshman team and our JV team, you know, on our varsity team, they're just you're having a lot of success at every one of those levels, and by the time they get to me, they expect to win. So it's just truly been ingrained in their minds and souls that's what they're here to do.
And winning is contagious, ain't it, Coach?
Sure.
Now. Philosophically, I want to ask you a philosophical question. I'm pretty sure you, just like every other coach, has a particular style of basketball that you like your teams to be able to play, which in turn is the way you would like to coach. But are you one of the rigid types, or does your approach vary depending on what your personnel is? Or do you make them adapt to you, or do you adapt to them? How's the give and take there?
Man, it's a little bit of both. For sure. We definitely play a lot different this year than we played in the previous season. We definitely played a lot different a couple of years ago versus the first few years that I was at Northwest. It's just kind of varies year to year. You know what you have coming up, and you kind of evaluate that talent, and you try to figure out ways as a coach to put them in positions to be successful. You know, you definitely have to alter, your system, from year to year. I don't think that we'll alter it much next year, because like I said, you're returning so many guys, you'll play pretty much the same style of basketball. Now, you know, philosophically for my style, we definitely, as a coaching staff, we're defensive minded, oriented first. And we want that to lead us into transition. We want to play you in transition. We want to try to rope you into it. And we want to play fast, but we want it to be done the right way. We're not going down just jacking up shots. We preach inside out. We preach penetrate off the penetration, penetrate and kick, and then penetrate off the penetrate kick. And so there's certain things that are, I guess, a staple to me every single year that we're working on. You know, there's definitely carryover from my style and personality. But like I said, it varies. It has to vary at the high school level. I mean, you know, you don't get the luxury of going out and recruiting at the college level or the NBA level and getting the certain guys that you want to have in your system. So it just, you're kind of at the will of the basketball gods of who's going to show up in your gym. So it definitely has to vary, in my opinion.
I like that one right there. We gotta take what we're dealt, right, and try to squeeze all the juice out of them. Now,
sure,
you made mention to your coaches, and I wanted to ask you this. Well, tell you this. First of all, I think that, you know, anybody who's in a position of leadership, I think to some degree we are control freaks, and I mean that to mean for the better, and even sometimes for the worse. Was it difficult for you at any point during your career as a head coach to delegate responsibilities to your help? Because I know sometimes as a head coach, you can be so gung-ho to want to attack and have your hands on everything. Was it tough to sort of relinquish the reins a little bit at any point in your career?
Yes and no.
Okay.
You know, I've got such a good staff. I mean, I'm going to plug Coach Womack and Mo Wilson and Creed Flowers. And I've had guy by the name of Brandon Rollins, who's now an assistant coach at MacU. He actually won a national championship there several years back at the NAIA level. He was on my staff. DJ Lemons,
yeah, got to play with him,
Team Griffin, and he's now with Kellen McCoy at Norman North, who runs a really good program. Of course, DJ played point guard at University of Central Oklahoma. So we've had just a ton of really good coaches, and I think that was, you know, when I took over the job, that was my first priority. Man, I got to get coaches in here, because I'll be the first to admit, you know, I've got strengths, I've got weaknesses, and I've got to get dudes in here that want to coach. I got to get dudes in here that are successful, that understand what it takes to be successful. And we've done that. I've been able to do that, and I've been so lucky and fortunate to have just a really good staff every single year. I you know, I believe that my staff is the best in the state of Oklahoma. I'll put it up. I'll put our credentials up against anybody's. And I think that our staff is as good as it gets. And so, you know, I trust those guys. I think early on in my coaching career, I struggled with it a little bit, because I felt like, okay, this is my responsibility. This is my program. I have to do things a certain way. But as I got older, and those guys like Mo Wilson and Coach Womack, James Womack, that have been there and have been around the block and have had successful teams that they've coached when they were head coaches, they kind of helped me through those moments and kind of coached me through those moments on how to handle things and what needs to be done and what needs to be said and how we're going to move forward. And, you know, I think now as a head coach, I expect those guys to work. They know that. But, you know, I'm also going to work the hardest. You know, it's my program ultimately, and I'm going to kind of set the example and set the tone, and, you know, everything else should fall in line with that. So, you know, they coach. We expect them to coach. I know this year, Coach Womack kind of took over the offensive stuff, and I did more of the defensive stuff. In years past, I did more of the offensive stuff, and he was more of the defensive guy. So there's those kind of coaches meetings that are occurring on a daily basis almost. I mean, we talk almost every day as a staff on what do we need to do to move forward? How do we need to get better? What do I got to do? What do you got to do? What do we got to do to get this thing done? So, you know, that's really where we're at currently as a staff. But I think, like you said, as a young coach, you make some of those mistakes. And I've been just fortunate enough to have guys experienced enough to help me through those times.
Man, now a lot of what we do in our positions is problem solving, troubleshooting, conflict resolution. And you know, I think, you know, those guys, not just your guys in your program, but your staff members, we spend so much time together. We're almost like family, right? And so, and in family settings, sometimes, you know, we don't always see eye to eye. So I'm pretty sure for as long as you've been doing this, there have been some moments where you and one of or some of your coaches may not have necessarily been on the same page. You know what I mean? How do you guys work through those conflicts without letting your ego drive you and taking things personally? How are y'all able to stay concerned with the same task?
It's funny, Coach Womack, before we take the floor every game, you know, we'll do our pregame speech with our players, and then they'll leave, and then we'll have a quick coaches meeting before we take the floor. And the thing that Coach Womack always says before we break down as a coaching staff, he says, "Don't worry about my feelings because I'm not worried about yours." meaning you better say everything that you're supposed to say in that game, and it better get said. Because we all ultimately want to win, and our egos do not need to be getting involved in this. We're here to set out a goal, and that's to win. And, you know, we may argue, but at the end of the day, we love each other. We understand that you know, in the heat of the moment, things get said and reactions occur, but it's going to stay there, you know, and we're going to move forward from it. And so, you know, again, that's one of those things that as a younger coach, I'm not sure I necessarily understood that. But again, having those older coaches around, those experienced coaches around, we've kind of just, there's a certain level of understanding, like we are family fights, we're going to argue, but there's going to be an understanding that occurs from that argument, no matter what. And we're going to be able to move forward no matter what. And there's a certain level of trust that comes with that. And I think, you know, honestly, I think that's one of the biggest problems in the world today. If we're going a political route, there's my political plug, but people don't want to hear the other side, and people want to, you know, argue, but they want to be right. But I'll be the first to admit I'm not right a lot of times. And so I need to have guys around me that will argue, will hash some stuff out. But at the end of the day, we still love each other.
That's a fact. And to your point about people not necessarily wanting to hear the other side, I think a lot of times in a back and forth, people aren't having a conversation or a debate or an argument to understand. They're just trying to get the last word or say the most hurtful thing.
Sure.
No, people are quiet long enough just for the other person to shut up so they can start talking.
And they're not truly listening and absorbing the information and trying to understand where that person's coming from and their perspective.
Oh yeah,
they want to be right.
Right, and we don't necessarily have to agree on anything. Because, you know, I think way too many people in the world for us to all agree on any one thing. You know what I'm saying? But sure. Now here's what I want to. I know I'm kind of all over the place, but I'm gonna go backwards a little bit. I remember seeing you as an assistant coach at Tulsa Edison High School some years back, maybe even around the time that I was in high school. And, you know, I'm always interested in the beginning of anybody's journey. So obviously now you're a head coach, you've been in this seat for about 5 or 6 years, give or take. Maybe I'm on point or a little bit off.
Eight years.
Okay.
Yeah. 8 years.
Where did your coaching career begin? How did you get started?
I think it, kind of dated, but honestly, I think I knew that I wanted to coach when I was in middle school.
Really?
My dad was a coach. He's a retired teacher now. You know, I played for Rusty Stecker at Broken Arrow for some time. And I actually did my student teaching and internship with him for a little bit as well. Him and Mike Humphreys, Coach Humphreys. You know, I think at an early age, I knew that, you know, once I was done playing, I wanted to go into the coaching route. I loved the game so much. And I just loved the competition. So I think I knew that I wanted to do it, you know, at an early age, which is a blessing, I guess, looking back at it, because a lot of people don't even know what they want to do when they're adults. So I definitely think it's something that you know, was God given, if you will. So, you know, I think I worked with the during college at Oklahoma State, I worked with the women's program for a year or so, did some stuff with them. From that point forward, you know, I was able to get on with Coach Parrish, at Tulsa Edison. And that was actually, a really fun journey, man. I learned a lot. Coach Parrish, and that program kind of put me on the map because of the success that they were having, you know, at the time. They were, you know, I think when I was there, we went to 3 state tournaments and we lost in the 2009 state championship.
I remember those teams.
So we had some really good players, some really good teams. We're putting a lot of kids in college. He was having a lot of success and still is. And, you know, just that name and that program you know, jump started my career. And I actually got my first head coaching job at little school out there by Muskogee, Porter.
Mm-hmm.
Porter High School. If you've heard of the Porter Peach Festival, that's probably what they're known for.
Absolutely.
We actually had some 2 really good seasons there. I was, again, you know, looking back at it, man, everything happens for a reason.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, we had a really good run. I think we lost in the game to go to state my first year as a head coach. And we had a 6'9 kid by the name of Eric Broadnax, who went to Connor State for 2 years and actually started at Northeastern State for 2 years. He had a really good career. And then I had a guy, a little point guard, averaged about 33 for me. He actually was the second leading scorer in the state of Oklahoma behind Stevie Clark, if you remember who that guy is.
Absolutely. Can't forget that name.
he was a pretty good player, too.
He used to get some buckets, man.
Jacob Richardson was the kid's name, and he played at University of Central Oklahoma under Terry Evans. So we had a couple really good basketball players at the 2A level, and so we had a lot of success. And I knew that my heart and soul lied back in 5A, 6A basketball, and I interviewed for, probably 5 or 6 different jobs, and I got told that I was runner up for 2 or 3 of them. And, you know, basically I was at the point where I was like, okay, well, at this point, I'm probably just going to stay at Porter another year. You know, if that's where I'm supposed to be, that's where I'm supposed to be. Then the Northwest Classen job came open, and I put my name in the hat for it. And a lot of people thought I was crazy because they were 2-22 the year before I took over. And I definitely did my research on the school, though, and understood that they had tradition. They've won state championships. They have a really rich alumni base, not even pertaining to basketball, just in general. The school itself used to be they were actually called the Silkies back in the day because everybody wore silk shirts.
Wow.
Because it used to be the rich school back in the day. So they had the nickname of the Silkies. So there's a lot of tradition that Northwest Classen that people don't even know about. Well, one of the most, I guess, notable guys is Skip Bayless.
Yeah.
But he went to Northwest Classen. You know, like I said, I did my research on Northwest. I knew, you know, a school with tradition can be successful. I put my name in the hat you know, Coach Womack, actually my assistant coach at the knew the principal at the time. You know, obviously the rest is history. I gotta, you know, give Coach Womack some credit because he was on my resume as a reference and felt like that was the right time and the right moment and the right person to have. And, you know, now he's with me on staff, and we've kind of formed a really strong relationship, and it's been a fun ride and journey so far.
Poetic justice right there, Coach.
Sure.
But while we're talking about relationships, let's stay in that realm for a bit. Compared to now, and again, you're a relatively young man even now, but when you were at Edison as an assistant, you were even younger. What type of challenges, if there were any, did you run into in terms of communicating with those guys, with you being relatively close to them in age? Because I'm pretty sure you probably didn't come in there ruling by the iron fist. What was there? Was there an icebreaker type of moment that to where they were like, okay, we can listen to Coach Jack?
Well, I think you have to have a younger coach on staff. You know, I've always had a younger coach on staff because as a head coach now with some experience, you know, your players don't always necessarily like you, and that's mm-hmm. okay. I get that. I understand that. And it's not necessarily my job for them to like me.
Sure.
You know, we're going to do things a certain way, and that's how we're going to do it. And I think it's the younger coach's job to get those players to understand, like, hey, he's right. You need to understand why, and this is why. And you can form those relationships with those players because of the proximity of age there. Okay, yeah, you are, you know, several years older than they are, and they understand that. And it's just a different way of forming a relationship with your players. So I think that was kind of one of my roles. You know, there was a lot of texting and stuff that occurred back then with the players in the program versus now. You know, I allow my younger guys to do that now versus, you know, I used to do that stuff when I was younger. So, you know, just getting those players to understand, hey, this is why he said what he said, or this is where he's coming from when he's saying this, or wanting you to do that. You know, I think that's what a good assistant coach does for his head coach, is kind of, you know, sweep some stuff away and take some problems away from that head coach down the road, take some headaches away.
For sure.
So I think that was kind of my role as a younger coach when I was at Edison, for sure.
Now, even with you being the boss man, at some point there will be some interaction between you and your guys. So whenever you're coaching your players from an individual standpoint, do you treat them? Do you try and handle them all the same, or does it vary? Does the approach vary from person to person based on what their personality type may be?
Oh, it absolutely varies. You know, certain guys we know respond to, you know, butt chewings, if you will. Exactly. Certain guys we'll have to walk up and put your arm around them and say, man, you know, we need this or that, or hey, you're really good at this, or whatever it may be. Or certain guys you can't chew out in front of his peers. You have to pull them down to your office. You know, there's different tactics and dimensions there for sure. So it's got to be a varying system as a coach. If you're treating everybody the same, I think you're doing your players and your program a disservice, in my opinion, because we all aren't the same. We're all products of our environments, and you know, not everybody has the same upbringing, and I may not fully understand, you know, that player, unless I'm forming a relationship with them. So, you know, it absolutely has to vary, in my opinion.
Man, look here. I mean, I believe there's no all-purpose way of communicating with people in general. So I think, yeah, man, you echoed the sentiments. Great. Now, we're going to take it back to the physical part, because I know you got to get ready for Game of Thrones, but I'm always interested in the process, so to speak. And I know that word has been thrown around a lot, kind of loosely in recent years, but the process from August through September, which would be known as the preseason. What does a preseason look like at Northwest Classic High School in the boys basketball program?
Sure. Well, I mean, you know, even you say August through September is preseason, but in my opinion, we're in preseason right now.
Mm.
Once that state tournament's over with, we better be adding stuff to our game, expanding our game. We better be working on our weaknesses as well as maintaining our strengths. And we actually have player exit meetings once we get back from spring break after the state tournament. We sit down with not every player, but we sit down with a lot of our guys and have some sort of exit meeting, like, you know, where are you at? What are you thinking about moving forward? Where do you want to grow and improve as a player? Here's my take on the whole situation and what we think And so, you know, there's that that occurs. We have actually a strength and conditioning program that we have set forth for this summer. We're actually not going to go into any team camps and summer leagues this summer because we're literally just going to focus on our bodies. You have so many guys returning next year, and you know, the majority of them are playing for, you know, their AAU teams, and they're all playing for, you know, really good AAU programs. So they're getting their games in. I do feel like there is such a thing as over exerting yourself as far as games. There is such a thing as playing too many games, I think, in my opinion, because you start playing too many games, they don't mean nothing. And so, you know, we have that approach as well. And so we're going into a strength and conditioning program throughout the summer. Our guys are bought in on that. They're excited about it because they've seen the results of, you know, just when they come in as freshmen, to some of them, obviously moving into being seniors that have put 4 years into their bodies, they've seen the results and they're bought in on, you know, the strength and conditioning aspect of what we're doing. And so the sports specific workouts that we're doing. And so, you know, we're doing that all the way through, you know, OSSA, I think allows us to go into a little bit of July. I think there's a new dead period, some new rules on stuff like that now. But we'll do it as long as we possibly can do it. And then, you know, moving into August and September, you'll kind of continue on with that, but it'll kind of get back into more, maybe 2 days lifting, 3 days working on skill work, nothing but skill work. And then as you're getting closer to the season, then you're slowly using your time slot, to maybe put in a few drills that you know that you're going to be using throughout the entire year. And then, you know, obviously October 1 hits, you're ready to hit the ground running. And it's a seamless, smooth transition. You're not just hopping right into it. You're in shape. Your body's ready to go. Your skill works tight. You know, you're ready to hit the ground running. And okay, now we're going to start working on the things that we need to do to be successful as a team to win basketball games. So, you know, there's definitely periods and transitional times where, you know, certain things are occurring. And I'm sure a lot of programs are that way, I would think, that you're doing to lead up to the regular season.
For sure. To your point about preservation, because I got two more things I want to throw at you now, then I'll turn you loose. But the first thing is, you know, I think basketball season, especially at the amateur level, is probably the longest running season of any sport on campus. And I, you know, season gets
it's long. A grind, baby.
It's a grind. But I remember being at one of y'all's final practices. Matter of fact, I think it was the final practice, and you probably remember what I'm talking about. You all closed practice with a very fun team activity, if you know what I'm saying.
Yeah.
And I always wonder,
little dodgeball.
There you go, little dodgeball action. How are you all able to sort of break the monotony, if you will, from day to day in terms of practice and keep those guys dialed in without them getting bored and without things getting stale, but still making those days be productive?
Sure. You know, I think it's just, it comes with experience. You know, we've been known to give a day off every now and then. My philosophy is I don't want to practice longer than an hour and a half.
Same.
I want that hour and a half to be just absolutely balls to the wall, though. Like, it just needs to be at 100 mile an hour pace. We're going to go as hard as we possibly can. And everything that we do in practice, every single thing that we do is competitive base. Whether it's a shooting drill, it's going to have some sort of score that we're keeping, or it's a time that we're keeping. And every drill that we have, every live action setting that we have, it is all competition based. It has a score, it has a time, and that's what we do in that allotted hour and a half period. So I've noticed that when I don't do stuff that's not competition based, it ain't the same. They're not is having as much fun with it, I guess you could say. But as soon as we turn it into something that's competitive, they're bought in and they're dialed in and they're going hard. So I've made some mistakes, you know, moving forward as a head coach where, okay, we're doing some of these breakdown drills or whatever it may be, guard post splits, whatever it may be. And they're just not moving with the same energy and purpose that I would like for them to move. But so I've had to figure out ways as a coach, okay, how can I make some of these drills, these skill work drills, competitive? And so I'll sit down, you know, day of or night before and think, okay, how can I make this drill competitive to where they're engaged, they're having fun, but they're also going hard and they're getting better in that process. So I do that from time to time. I also, you know, as a staff, we bounce a lot of those ideas off of each other. Okay, hey, do you have a shooting drill? What do you have? Okay, let's hear it. All right, I like that. Let's put that in tomorrow. So a lot of that stuff occurs. And then, you know, like I said, hour and a half, I think is the right amount of time for a high school kid to stay engaged. I think once you're getting close to 2 hours, you know, you're pushing it a little bit, and anything over 2 hours is just too much, in my opinion. Now, the other coaches may disagree. Hell, I don't want to be there for over two hours personally either.
Absolutely. Yeah, I can't necessarily blame them. Yeah, you can turn a good day into a bad day just because you don't know how to go home.
Absolutely, absolutely. And everything, I mean, I make practice schedules, but everything that I do is field-based, okay? That's a nice flow to that drill. I really like it. Let's move on to the next thing. Okay, boom. All right, well, we're really struggling with this concept today, so we need to spend a little bit more time with this particular drill or activity or whatever we're doing. So, you know, there's a lot of different things that you learn as a head coach, a lot of different tricks and tactics that you can kind of throw out there. And, you know, a lot of that stuff occurred early on in my coaching career. A lot of it was just trial and error. Okay, I like that. They really liked that. Okay, that really wasn't very successful. I'm never going to do that again. So, you know, and I never tell them when they're going to have a day off.
Right.
I never tell them. I'll text them in the group message and say, okay, we're not practicing today. We're going to watch film and y'all are going to go home. And, you know, a lot of times that occurs after a game or maybe some a back-to-back of some sort,
right.
Just to kind of save their bodies, because I do understand that season is such a grind. You know, you have to be fresh. You can't overdo it. And so, you know, keeping those guys' legs and bodies right, that's definitely something that you have to figure and factor into the whole equation. So, and then, like you said, we like to do fun stuff every now and then. I've been known to set up the volleyball net and we'll play volleyball. I've been known to pull the dodgeballs out and we'll play some dodgeball. So, you know, they're always real receptive. And, you know, sometimes they're like, what are we doing? And then once they actually get into it, they enjoy it and they're all smiling and having fun. And I think that's what it's all about.
Next thing you know, they show up for the next practice, rejuvenated, ready to work.
Yeah. Absolutely. I've seen it time and time again where that next practice after you've done something like that is typically the best practice in the week.
Last thing, Coach, this is turning into a little bit of a traditional question on my podcast. I want to talk about influences, right? I don't think that anybody gets all of what they want totally alone. And I don't think anybody gets all the way to where they're headed and where they want to go without some help along the way. So share some of your special people or influences or go-to people, people that you have enough respect for and trust for, or trust in rather, that you'll pick up the phone and you'll call them whenever you get, you know, you got some questions or you need some advice or you need somebody to speak some life into you. Who do you go to?
Sure. Well, I definitely think it's my parents, first and foremost. You know, I'm not where I'm at today without, you know, the stuff that they've done for me. So I think obviously, you know, they're number one in my heart. Like I said, I mentioned earlier that my dad coached. You know, my mom was in education. She's actually getting ready to retire this year.
Hey.
Coming up in May. So she's getting ready to move into a different part of her life. But, you know, both of them have instilled a lot of qualities in me. You know, now that I kind of look back at it, 34 years old, I can kind of understand why they did and said the things that they did at the time. So definitely them. And then I think, like I said, I mentioned Coach Decker at Broken Arrow. He was there for years. I think he's still there, but I think he's more up in the administration part of the whole deal now. And then, you know, honestly, Coach Womack and Coach Mo Wilson, you know, those are my guys, and they've been with me since day one, since I stepped foot at Northwest. And I know I can pick up the phone and call them and vent to them, and we can talk about some stuff. And I know that they care about me, and vice versa. And, you know, it's definitely formed into a really, really good relationship that, you know, obviously I don't think I saw coming, you know, until, you know, recently. So I think those people for sure are my inspirations as far as why I'm doing what I'm doing and why I've been so successful.
Coach, salute you on a job well done this season, man. I got to thank you for giving me some time on this Sabbath Sunday to sit down on the podcast and give me some gems. I'm definitely going to be watching your program, whether it's up close or from a distance in the months to come. And I wish you nothing but the best, my brother.
Absolutely, Coach. I appreciate it.
No doubt about it. Folks, appreciate y'all for listening. And we're going to hit you with another one next week on Sports Speak Podcast. And we're out of here.